This is Poetry Off the Shelf from the Poetry Foundation. I'm Curtis Fox. This week, the new motherhood poem. Around Mother's Day on this podcast, we usually try to feature poems about mothers. There are lots of them and lots of very good ones. This time, though, we're going to listen to a few poems written from the perspective of motherhood. No crying babies here. Just an outlook on the world that is informed by the fundamental life-changing fact of having brought another human being into the world. The poems were chosen by Rachel Richardson, a poet and a mother who lives in Berkeley. Her latest book is called 100-Year Wave. Hi, Rachel.
Hi. Thanks for having me, Curtis.
Oh, my pleasure. So in a book review that you wrote for the Kenyon Review, you noted that this is a trend in contemporary poetry, poems specifically from the perspective of new motherhood. What's new about this and where does it come from?
Well, I think we have a long tradition of the motherhood poem existing in American poetry, but it's been a subject that's been considered a bit taboo for serious poetry. And so every mother writer who attempts this or finds herself faced with this material seems to face some anxiety that it's a kind of poetry that might be dismissed, a domestic subject, a simple adoration or protectiveness or something that would diminish the seriousness of the poem.
So a lot of women poets fear the mother poem because they'd be typecast as mother poets?
I think that's right. I think that ever since Sylvia Plath, our sort of progenitor of the contemporary mother poem, the mother of the mother poem, maybe, we have been concerned that the subject will overshadow the craft involved in the poem, that subject of motherhood makes it a kind of poetry, a poetry of the domestic or a poetry of adoration and protectiveness, and not a fierce or well-crafted piece of art.
And so what's changed? In recent years, there seem to be younger female poets pretty comfortable writing mother poems and even labeling their books mother poem books. What's changed?
I think that's true. Women in contemporary poetry seem to be addressing this subject much more directly rather than having it emerge slyly within the poems. I'm not sure what we can credit the change to, but I think that women poets writing on this subject are more interested in the perspective shift that's happening in new motherhood. And in fact, often the babies are hardly mentioned in the poems at all. We just recognize that the poet has undergone a great shift in perspective by having become a mother.
Mm-hmm. So let's hear some poems that kind of illustrate what you're saying. Carrie Fountain is a poet who lives in Austin, Texas. Her latest book, which the poem you're about to read comes from, is called Instant Winner. And the poem you chose is called simply Yes. Is there anything you'd like to say about it before you read it?
Well, this whole book, Instant Winner, makes a subject out of, I think, one simple and sort of comical element of new motherhood, which is the surprise of being in it. We sort of turned around and woke up one morning and there we were, and there might have been this whole other life. The strangeness of that total shift is hard to recognize. So it's as if she, the speaker in Instant Winner, wakes up one morning with a one-year-old and wonders how she got here.
Okay, it's called Yes. Why don't you give it a read?
I am done smoking cigarettes, done waiting tables, done counting tips at 2 a.m. in the neon dark dance hall, done sleeping with young men in my apartment, done facing them or not, thinking of oblivion, which is better than nothing. I am done not wearing underwear because it's so Victorian. I am done telling men I don't wear underwear because it's so Victorian. I am done with the night a guy spread my legs on a pool table, all those balls piled up in the pockets. I am done. I am never going back. When I see that night on the street, I will drive past and never even glance over. I am done going to grad school, nodding in your workshop. I am done teaching English as a second language, saying I, pointing to my chest, saying you, pointing to them. I am done teaching the poetry class where no one talked and no one listened to me, and outside the window the cottonwood wagged its sun-white leaves in the breeze as if to say, I give up, I give up. I am done being a childless woman, a childless wife, a woman with no scars on her body. I am done with the wide afternoons of before, the long stare, the tightly closed door. And I am done, too, for the most part, with the daydream of after. I am after for now. I am turning up the heater to see if that will make the baby sleep another 15 minutes so I can finish this poem. I am done thinking of the past as if it had survived, though sometimes I think of the past and sometimes I see it coming, catching up, hands caked with dried mud, head shaved clean.
So in a sense, this is a poem, this is a valediction to her youth. She's done with all that. She's put it behind her.
Right. Although there's a difference, I think, between I am done and it is over. Mm. It seems that the past maybe still exists, or the other possibility still exists, just on a different trajectory. The repetitiveness and pattern gives a sort of weariness to that old and a readiness to give it up.
Right.
Or simply a finality with which those choices are given up.
Yeah, even though she seems to have some good memories, some fun memories, and some boring
memories.
That's
right. And then I think, too, the fact that the poem is called Yes changes the feel of the anaphora, too, right? The doneness. There's some affirmation, too, of the life that she's now got or the decision she's now made. It's a surprisingly positive frame for this poem that's talking about being done with everything.
Although it ends with a very spooky image, though sometimes I think of the past and sometimes I see it coming, catching up, hands caked with dried mud, head shaved clean. That's like an image from a horror movie, the past coming out of the swamp or the past coming out of the grave or something like that.
Or the beast slouching toward Bethlehem.
It's terrifying. So what do you make of that? The past is this thing that's going to like kill her or something.
Well, there is a happiness to be done with it, a clean break or a desire never to go back to those days. While some of the memories might have been positive, a lot of them are quite negative, things that one would really tire of.
Teaching English classes or teaching a poetry class where no one talked.
And going on tiresome dates.
Yes, tiresome dates. But, you know, having sex on the pool table, that seems okay to me. I don't know.
Probably that part. depending.
So the poem is making a point that having a child who's there in the room with the poet has changed your view of the past. But how does that happen? How do children change the past itself?
Well, I think in this poem, most prominently, the child changes the poem. That's part of what's interesting about it to me. We have the child changing the form of the poem, serving as the turn. So we have this endless, I am done, that's hardly ever interrupted or changed in pattern for probably 20 lines. And then we have, I am turning up the heater to see if that will make the baby sleep another 15 minutes so I can finish this poem. So whether the poem gets finished or not is determined by the baby and not the poet at this point. And the shape of the poem is going to be determined by the baby and not the poet.
Yeah.
This is probably true for a lot of us, that we trained as poets, we practiced, we began writing before we had children. And so we had our workshops, we went on dates, we had sex on the pool table, we listened to the cottonwood outside and wrote. And then the baby came along and the question was, would we ever write again? So this is a poem that speaks to how the writer still writes, but the poem is never ignoring the fact that the baby's in the next room sleeping and that that's part of the new life and the new consciousness of the writer.
Well said. Let's go to the other poem you chose. This one is by Catherine Nurnberger, who lives in Columbia, Missouri. And this poem comes from her recent book, The End of Pink. It's called Little Lesson on How to Be. This is also a prose poem. Is there anything that you want to say about it before you read this one?
This is a poem that makes use of multiple perspectives and multiple characters. So we hear a conversation that's happening between several people who the speaker is observing. So the poem begins to read like a short story.
Yeah, I was going to say, it reads like a very, very short story.
Right. And the characters end up representing pretty much all the different stages of life.
Well, let's hear it. Here's Little Lesson on How to Be by Catherine Nurnberger.
The woman at the Salvation Army who sorts and prices is in her 80s, and she underestimates the value of everything, for which I am grateful. Lightly used snowsuits size 2T are $6, and snow boots are $3. There is a little girl, maybe 7, fiddling with a tea set. Her mother inspects drapes for stains. Sometimes the very old and lonely are looking for an opening. She glances up from her pricing and says something about the tea set and a baby doll long ago. I am careful not to make eye contact, but the mother with drapes has such softness in her shoulders and her face, and she knows how to say the perfect kind of thing. What a wonderful mother you had. Yes, she was. Why do children sometimes notice us and sometimes not? From the bin of dolls, what happened to your mother? She died. The woman at the Salvation Army who sorts and prices is crying a little. She seems surprised to be crying. It's been 80 years and I still miss her. When my daughter was born, I couldn't stop thinking about how we were going to die. If we were drowning, would it be better to hold her to me even if she fought away, or should I let her float off to wonder why her mother didn't help her? What if it's fire and I have one bullet left? I made sure my husband knew if there were death squads and he had to choose, I'd never love him again if he didn't choose her. If I'm lucky, her crying face is the last thing I'll see. The mother with drapes is squeezing her daughter's shoulder, trying to send a silent message, but children are children. Why did she die? She was going to have a baby and she died. But she was a wonderful mother. I'm holding a stack of 4 wooden jigsaw puzzles of farm animals, dinosaurs, jungle animals, and pets, each for a quarter. It's silly how much I still miss her. She takes out a tissue and wipes her eyes and then her nose. When my grandmother threw her sister Susie a 90th birthday party, 100 people came, including 5 of the 6 brothers and sisters. At dusk, only a few of us were left, nursing beers with our feet kicked up on the bottom rungs of various walkers. Susie said then to my grandmother, "Can you think of all the people watching us in heaven now? And our mother must be in the front row." Grandma took her sister's hand. "Our mother, Estelle." Yes, her name was Estelle. I forgot that. They looked so happy then, saying her name back and forth to each other. Estelle, Estelle.
That's wonderful. Estelle. They must have probably never called her that during their, they probably called her mom during their last, but here they are repeating her first name. What do you make of the old woman? Apparently her mother died when she was quite young. What do you suppose the poem is getting at there about the centrality of motherhood?
The older woman's participation in the poem reminds me a little bit of the baby who's sleeping in the other room in Carrie Fountain's poem, that she interrupts and presents this other direction that the poem needs to turn, or another way for the poem to shape itself. She hasn't gotten over her mother's death, even though her mother died 80 years ago, so she was probably quite a young child.
Yeah.
Young enough that she wouldn't even think of her mother by name. She would only think of her as her mother in that mythic, intimate, intense, childish sense. Mm. And she still exists there in that way, in this woman's memory.
Yeah, as opposed to the old women at the end of the poem remembering their mother's name, Estelle, remembering her as a whole human being, basically, and beyond just being a mother.
Right.
That's a lovely touch. The part of the poem that just amuses me, the sickest part of the poem, is when my daughter was born, I couldn't stop thinking about how we were going to die. If we were drowning, would it be better to hold her to me as she fought away, or should I let her float off to wonder why her mother didn't help her? So those are the kind of crazy thoughts new parents have, usually induced by sleep deprivation and things like that. But it's such a funny and bizarre moment to throw in the middle of the poem.
I think those are probably the most primary thoughts we have as new parents, because we've never been responsible in that way for life. There's this obsession with death and also with violence, which seems to be the exact opposite of the expected relationship with the child and probably the relationship that's lived with the child. but how can one not think of its opposite?
Yeah, it's comically absurd because the scenarios she imagines, including a death squad, which seem pretty unlikely for an American poet to face a death squad. But it does ring true to the bizarre fears that new parents can have about protecting their children.
It also reminds us how much luck is involved in the raising of a child.
Yeah.
And in the having of a child in our particular circumstances, any of ours, we probably won't face these things. And yet, how do we deserve not to think about that possibility? It is possible for us, and it is much more real for so many other parents.
Yeah.
That it seems it's always sort of lurking there on the edge.
Yeah, we are lucky. And it's an unusual passage because it's funny in an American context and not funny at all when you think about the real context for a lot of people throughout the world.
Right. And children are this universalizing experience. Maybe that's why the motherhood poem has been diminished or dismissed by so many critics, is that it seems so universalizing as to be cliche, but it's also what can make us reflect more deeply on our particular circumstances and also our lack of individuality, that we are animal in so many ways and we are vulnerable to fate in the ways that anyone else on the planet is. I think, you know, when we're 25 and we're doing the kinds of things that Carrie Fountain talks about doing in her poem,
yeah,
we feel that we have all of this control in our lives. And upon having kids, a lot of that disappears. And what happens if the death squad comes? What happens if we are all drowning? We start thinking about those things much more centrally.
Rachel, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
Rachel Richardson's latest book of poems is called 100-Year Wave. Any motherhood poems in there, Rachel?
Oh, yes. Motherhood and seafaring and all the kinds of adventures that I am not having in my life.
Do let us know what you think of this podcast. Email us at podcast@poetryfoundation.org. The theme music for this program comes from the Claudia Quintet. For Poetry Off the Shelf, I'm Curtis Fox. Thanks for listening.